morning. Go ahead and turn to John chapter 17. We'll be in John for a few moments this morning. I'd like to talk to you about you. Not about you. I don't want to talk about you. Maybe I do. I want to talk to you about the truth and our relationship with the truth. John speaks a lot about truth. In John 17, verses 16 and 17, he says, "They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth." This is Jesus' prayer for his disciples, for disciples everywhere. And we use this phrase a lot, sanctify them in your truth. Your word is truth. But when you look at verse 16, it's more than that. He is saying we are not supposed to be of the world. We are supposed to be of the truth. We are supposed to be people of the truth. Just like people of the world are of the world and are consumed by the world, we should be people consumed by truth. Jesus says in chapter 14, he says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." He is the truth. We should be people of the truth. We should be people of Jesus. It's just another way of saying that. But we also have to deal with Satan and his dealings with the truth. John 8, again, John is all about truth. John 8, 44, they're describing Satan here. Jesus is describing Satan. He's actually talking to the Jewish leadership. And he says, "You are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and has nothing to do with the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies." This is a great contrast from God and from Jesus. Jesus says that he is truth and he speaks the truth. And even though he speaks the truth, no one believes him. Psalm 119 speaks about the rule of God and the law of God and its truthfulness. Psalm 119 verse 160 says, "The sum of your word is truth. Every one of your righteous rules endures forever." But just because there is no truth in Satan doesn't mean he doesn't use the truth. It doesn't mean that he doesn't speak the truth ever. But he uses it for his own designs. We see this in many, many cases. We see this for the very first time in the garden when we meet Satan himself. Right? Genesis 3, what does he do? He tempts Eve. And he says, at the end of that nice short speech, "You shall not surely die," when he's tempting her with that fruit. And then she ate it. And did she die? No. In a sense, he spoke the truth. He spoke kind of the truth. He spoke mostly the truth. He spoke the truth with a nasty little twist. She didn't drop dead. Adam didn't drop dead. Eventually they died. They misunderstood what God meant. And Satan used that misunderstanding and he used the truth against them. He twisted that truth. We see this in several other cases that I want to bring out. Do you remember Gideon? Gideon was an amazing judge in Judges chapter 8. Judges chapter 8. All of a sudden I lost where the book of Judges was. Amazing things happen when you're up here. Judges chapter 8. Verse 22 through 27. We'll read those verses. "Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, 'Rule over us, you and your son and your grandson also, for you have saved us from the hand of Midian.' Gideon said to them, 'I will not rule over you, and my son will not rule over you. The Lord will rule over you.' And Gideon said to them, 'Let me make a request of you. Every one of you give me an earring from his spoil,' for they had golden earrings because they were Ishmaelites. And they answered, 'We will willingly give them.' And they spread a cloak, and every man threw in the earrings of his spoil. And the weight of the golden earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, besides the crescent ornaments and the pendants and the purple garments worn by the kings of Midian, and besides the collars that were around the necks of the camels. And Gideon made an ephod of it and put it in his city, in Ophrah. And all Israel whored after it there, and it became a snare to Gideon and to his family. Here we have something that was supposed to memorialize truth, something that was supposed to celebrate the defeat of the Midianites at the hand of Gideon through God. And what happened? It got taken, and it got twisted into an idol, and it got turned into a curse for this family and for the region. We see this again. This one's very interesting. Do you remember the bronze serpent in Numbers 21? Children are grumbling again and again and again. They do it continually. And so God sends serpents, fiery serpents, to come poison them, to kill them. And a bronze serpent is made. And whoever can get to that center of camp and look at that bronze serpent will be saved. And that's all we hear about that for a long, long time. Until Hezekiah. In 2 Kings chapter 18, the first couple of verses are a very brief summary of Hezekiah's reign. And in verse 4, it says that he broke that serpent and stopped the idolatry. That had been going on since the time of Moses, since the time of the wanderings. That had been going on for 600 years. That's incredible. So something that saved the children of Israel, something that was a banner of godliness and truth, got turned into and got twisted into an idol. All because Satan took the truth and just twisted it just a little bit, just perverted it just a little bit, poisoned it. And then we get to the Samaritan woman. The Samaritan woman in John 4. Jesus is traveling through Samaria. He stops at Sychar. The disciples go into town to go get some food, go get some provisions for their journey as they're journeying. And Jesus strikes up the conversation with the woman at the well. We know that story extraordinarily well. And in verse 20, she asks about worship. And she says, "We Samaritans, we worship on this mountain. And you guys worship in a temple." And it occurred to me to look one time. What mountain was it? Where were they? They were at Jacob's Well. Jacob's Well happens to be, and Sychar happened to be, in between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. Famous Old Testament mountains. Mountains where the blessings of God and the cursings of God were proclaimed to the children of Israel, where they had to shout them at each other so that they knew the blessings and the curses that were to be theirs, depending on how they lived their lives. The Samaritans took this sacred place, this place of holiness, where once the Israelites did worship under Joshua. It's in Joshua chapter 8. They built, an idol there. They built an altar there. They built an altar there and worshiped. And the Samaritans took that remnant of truth, that nugget of truth, that kernel of truth, and with Satan's help, surely, they twisted that truth. They perverted that truth. And they poisoned that place and turned it into a place of idolatry, into a high place instead. Which gets to our relationship with the truth. We should be very careful with the truth. It's not enough to know the truth. It's not enough to have the truth. Obviously, spiritual truth is of the utmost importance. That's what we're talking about. Philippians 4:8, right? We get that list of things. Whatever is, and it starts with, whatever is true. We should think on those things, right? True, honorable, and I don't remember all the rest off the top of my head. I butcher them. But it starts with truth. We can't be fooled by these twisted, perverted truths. These half-truths. These are lies wearing a veil of truth. And underneath is poison. I think of Jesus when he calls the Pharisees. He calls them whitewashed tombs. They look pretty on the outside, right? You see those pictures of Grecian cities and they're just sparkling white and blue roofs. They look like that. They look like the perfect little Grecian town with nice whitewashed plaster. But inside, they're rotting corpses. That's what Satan's use of truth looks like. Many godly people throughout history, throughout the Bible, have been taken in by this truth. And these are harms that last for generations for hundreds, for centuries, literal centuries, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. We cannot limit our love of truth, though, to the Bible only. What happens to our credibility if we speak biblical truth, but we're taken in by other lies from our life around us? Do we have any credibility left? What if we are the kind of people who succumb to things like tabloids, conspiracy theories, rumors, political speech, right? How do you know if a politician is lying? His mouth's open. They all lie to us constantly. They all tell us half-truths, all of these things, right? I just shake my head. I don't go to the grocery store often, right? I just don't. And I went to the grocery store and I saw the tabloids. I never see the tabloids. And I just laugh at them. They're ridiculous. It's absolutely crazy. But they're all Satan's tools. Tools that he's using. Because if he can discredit us in one aspect of life, why would anybody listen to us in any aspect of our life? If we are not people of truth, not just spiritual truth, but truth, then even our enemies will have nothing to say against us. Ephesians 4:25 says it this way. Put away falsehood. Let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor. It's not enough to just know the truth. It's not enough to just contain the truth within us, even if it's secular truth and spiritual truth, and we are people who are encyclopedias of truth. Even that's not enough. We have to share the truth. We haven't been given it to keep it a secret. What good would that be? What good would it be to have the truth and keep it a secret? That was one of the failings of the children of Israel. They were supposed to be a beacon to the people of the world about what it means to have the truth and to serve God, and they squandered it and became worse than the nations around them. Know for sure that Satan is trying to deceive us. And he will use any means necessary to deceive and discredit us. If he can't shake us from spiritual truth, he will discredit us in the eyes of everyone around us. We see that 1 Timothy 4. Satan is sending us deceitful spirits. That is real. We have to believe that that is real and that he is doing it to derail us in some way from accomplishing the mission of God. We have to be vigilant regarding spiritual truth and just as vigilant with all truth. So that's my invitation. I'll ask you, are you credible? Can you speak credibly with your neighbors, with your coworkers? Would they believe you? Would they have reason not to believe you? Those are hard questions. Those are questions that I ask myself. If we aren't, then we are not a useful tool to God. We are a branch barren of fruit that's going to be pruned and burned in a fire. We're dealing with wildfires all around us. They're terrifying. Fire is destruction. God's not going to keep us around for decoration, right? There are ornamental trees, and then there are producing trees. God is not in the business of having ornamental trees. It's not what we're supposed to do. So that's the invitation. I hope it is encouraging. I hope it is thought-provoking. I hope it helps you with your spiritual life. I always say things that I need to hear. I'll let you know that. If there is anyone who needs the help of the congregation, if you are ready to be baptized, if you're ready to accept that Jesus is truth and accept him into your life and accept him as the ruler of your life, we stand ready to assist you at that time. If you have any spiritual need at all, we ask that you would come as we stand and as we sing.